KPCA, LP, Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM.
Everybody.
I think you just did.
We're live while the intro music is still playing.
Oh my god. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas. I co-host this show every Friday from 11 to noon with my buddies, Jason Davies and Janice Peter Thompson.
Good morning.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful morning, actually.
Yeah, all that rain, and now we've got some nice.
I know, it's going to rain next week, Wednesday and Thursday, apparently.
I hear that we're over the drought.
I heard that, too. I read the same thing.
Yeah.
I know.
Both read out newspapers.
I've heard that before.
yeah, next year we'll hear the same thing again. We know how that goes.
Yeah. So we have Dennis Posse with us today.
Yay.
Dr. Dennis Posse, welcome.
Hello, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for being here. It's going to be a fun show.
I know, it's going to be a fun show.
We've got so much to talk about.
Friday's always good.
Yeah, we have a lot to talk about. And, Dennis was joining us at the last minute, and so I want to thank you again for that. You saved us.
Yeah, we saved the opportunity.
We would have been guestless.
We never have a problem speaking.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Right. Sometimes we pause a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
But I would like to just bring up the fact that a girlfriend of mine from junior high and high school, mother died. Her name is Rita Boynton. And her daughter, Barbara, who I went to high school with, after high school, she was hitchhiking through the United States and unfortunately was actually murdered. And it was really a sad, sad situation. I still think of Barbara, and when I was cleaning out my mom's house, I found these great pictures of Barbara and I. And so now, you know, I have pictures of us. But it's a sad day. She was in her in her 80s, had a great life. But it's always sad when somebody that you had a lot of respect for passes away. And then, of course, Frank Lynch, who was on our school board, passed away, age 71, and that's unfortunate. And sadness, but also the reality that we'll have a school board opening, and most likely the school board will appoint a new trustee, and I'm kind of hoping maybe we look for somebody in the Hispanic neighborhood, so we can have a really good balance, because right now we have pretty good balance on the school board.
Yeah, we do.
And so, you know, let's consider.
Yes,
I think putting our thinking caps on of people who would be really good benefiting our students.
Yeah, too bad we couldn't have that balance on the city council.
That's very true.
And speaking of which, Dr. Dennis was a candidate for Petaluma City Council in last November. A narrow loss. Are you going to try again?
I won't say absolutely not, but I bet against it. I'd like to get a young person of color to run for that seat,
yeah,
you know, next time. But if no one's there and it's getting to be the last day, I may. But I'm not planning on it.
Yeah. Well,
good.
You know, you've got a pretty strong voice on the opposite side of the dais. So, you know, you're an activist, and I don't see you going away.
No, we don't have enough time left. You know, I have to say that, you know, I'm still becoming more active on I won't say daily, but weekly basis, just because I'm worried about leaving the world, getting old and leaving the world worse than I found it.
Yeah, in fact, you're wearing a T-shirt that says "Citizen of the World." That's kind of cool.
Yeah,
that I'm lazy. Okay, so I don't like to have a big list in my brain of what shirt I wear to which demonstration, and I feel like this covers everything.
I like that.
It does.
Unless you go to another planet or something.
Yeah.
Mars, anybody?
I like the quote that's on your website. the Paul Wellstone quote? We all do better when we all do better.
That's a good one.
That was a sad time when Paul Wellstone.
Yeah. But what a champion for liberalism.
Now, I love that guy. I love that quote. And it actually got me, I forget now, but it got me a couple of small donations from Minnesota from people that just somehow ran across my campaign and saw that I was using his quote.
Wow.
Yeah, when I was a union executive, I worked with Paul Wellstone. And,
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Didn't know that.
Yeah. Huh. He was very fond of the healthcare workers union. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
Which brings me back to healthcare. You were a doctor at Kaiser Permanente for a while.
Yes.
Retired.
Very long time, actually, in two stints. Yes.
Yeah. How long were you there?
Well, I was. I think I'm credited with something like 29 years.
Yeah.
I left in mid-career. I did primary care, general internal medicine for almost 10 years, and then needed a sabbatical because at that point, I've always been impatient. Kaiser would not close a practice in those days, okay? This was like 1988. You could not close your practice. I'm pretty sure I had the largest practice in internal medicine at Kaiser Santa Rosa. They wouldn't close it, so I said, I'm going to take a leave then. I went to UC Davis to do a fellowship in occupational and environmental medicine and didn't think I would come back to Kaiser, it turned out that occupational medicine and health was the Wild West at that point in time, and every small private clinic I interviewed with, in my opinion, had some kind of scam or fraud going on. Kaiser was the only place I could go to at that time, other than solo practice on my own, where I could practice what I thought was ethical medicine.
Yesterday, I went and saw a spinal clinic, because I've had an injection in my spine before. And so I went yesterday. And the doctor that I had gone to left this practice in Santa Rosa, and now he's down in L.A. But you'd go in, and they would make you take a urine test to see if drugs were in your system every time. It's like, I'm not here for that. And so finally, I just said, absolutely, I would not do it. And it was a moneymaker is what it is. And I'm sure that there's, you know, good reasons for it, but that is not what I was there for. And so he would, you know, let me go without having the pee test.
Well, that's interesting. Yes, I mean,
so you're talking about, it's the same thing.
Yeah, sure. At the time I'm speaking of one clinic, everyone was getting a spirometry test, a breathing test, a lung test, even if you were a 20-year-old female never smoker who was not going to do any exerting work.
Exactly.
For example.
Now, in addition to having a background as a doctor, you have some engineering experience.
Yes, my undergraduate degree was in engineering, and quite honestly, I never read a book or took Biology 1 through high school and college. I swear, the day after I graduated, I saw the term bioengineering. And I said, wow, I think this is, you know, this seems like where things are going. And so I read a Biology 1 textbook and was starting graduate school at Stanford the next month. And I went around to every engineering, chief of every engineering sub-department, mm-hmm. and said, will you mentor me on a bioengineering PhD?
Wow.
And everyone, I got the same answer several places, which was, if you want to do that, you should go to medical school.
So that's what you did?
And so that's what I did. But then it seemed like everyone wanted to do research in bioengineering at medical school, even in the Midwest at Creighton, where I ended up.
Uh-huh.
And I enjoyed taking care of patients and probably was seduced by all the rapid positive feedback from patients. You know, even though they got better on their own, they give the physician credit.
Huh.
Well, you probably had a very good bedside manner, I would imagine.
I think I did, but you know, not for everyone. But I was pleased that when I really had a couple of bad dreams early in the campaign that some patients that really disliked me. But in actuality, I will tell you that the two patients I ran into on the campaign trail who either I remembered that they didn't like something I had done or they remembered, both said they've come to appreciate what I had done and had only positive things to say. So I was very pleased with that.
That's where, you know, people need to stop and pause and really look back and their thoughts change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, their values change.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So as far as like the engineering, there was a doctor in Kaiser down in the East Bay, and he did a lot of hip replacements, knee replacements. And when somebody I knew was researching a doctor, it was really important to find somebody with an engineering background, because if somebody's going to go ahead and cut on you and give you a new knee or a new hip, you want them to really know how those articulations going.
Yeah.
And he was, he had quite the credentials, this doctor. I can't remember his name. I would if I looked him up. But it was pretty impressive.
Well, I do believe that the engineering background helps in every aspect of medicine, just both being sciences, if you will. But
that's right.
But by the same token, engineers aren't known for a good bedside manner.
This guy actually had one, and it was unusual. You're right.
Yeah. So you make there's a point on your website that says quite possibly, this is under fun facts, quite possibly the only medical school graduate in modern history. And then parentheses, if 1972 is considered modern, who never had a medical school admissions interview.
Absolutely. I've never run anyone else. I tell that story all the time. So, see, I was undergraduate at Caltech, which was a very difficult school for me, okay? I mean, quite honestly, I didn't think this overtly, but when I was in high school, as anyone who graduates near the top of their class does, you know, I think somewhere deep down, I thought I arguably might be the smartest person in the world, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And going to Caltech, I was clearly in the bottom half of the group entering. I mean, wow. Just clear from day one, okay? So it was a good experience for me in that respect.
So is it sort of like, if you're a musician and you play with better musicians, you get better as a musician. Did you find yourself getting smarter?
Absolutely. I learned more that first year at Caltech.
So that's the trick. Hang out with smarter people.
You know, if you go into engineering, you're you want to be exact with everything, okay? At Caltech, all the tests and such, you had to make estimates. They would ask you things like, what is the likelihood that you get you have at least one molecule of carbon in your body that is the same molecule that was in a dinosaur, okay? So they'd expect you to make a bunch of estimates.
Yeah.
A lot of it was just learning how to make estimates when you didn't have a clue off the top of your head about stuff.
Wow.
You know, how many carbon atoms in the world, you know, make some kind of estimate, how many carbon mm-hmm. atoms in a body. And it wasn't about making the right guess. It was just about getting comfortable doing that. Engineers do it all the time.
Right. Interesting. Well, I was... with the whole thing about getting into college and all the cheating that's been going on, I was, of course, reminded of last year when the valedictorian problem at Petaluma High happened with Lulabelle sites and the mic was cut. But the interesting thing is it seemed like they had changed the criteria of who the valedictorian or salutatorian was going to be. Instead, if you look it up, it's really the top GPA. And the second highest GPA is normally what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seemed like something was going on last year. Not sure exactly what was going on, but something didn't smell really right. And so I just want to say that I'm so proud of Lulabelle. She is on a full scholarship there. She's doing well. She's right in the middle of finals right now. And she really worked hard to get the GPA that she had. But she also had to fight to be valedictorian and prove that she was the highest. And so I'm just hoping that that this is resolved with our new school board, because that was one of the reasons that they were elected.
I'm proud to be in the city that she came from.
Oh, God, I am too. I actually had a conversation just texting back and forth with her and her mom the last few days. And they're just both very strong, great women. And she is disappointed that Stanford is part of this cabal of the cheating, which is very disappointing. But I'm just really proud to be part of this community that she came from.
Yeah. This is just this all this cheating is just, you know, it just all goes back to this idea that money is the be-all and the end-all for everything.
Well, and it kind of goes back to, why did they all of a sudden change how to become how a valedictorian or salutatorian was actually chosen.
Yes.
And it's, you know, politics is everywhere in a community. And,
well, it's also, it's almost like people have forgotten that old saying that it's not how you, it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. It seems like winning at all costs,
exactly.
No matter what, is the motive for people. And it's just a matter of, I just want this degree. It's not a matter of learning, you know, what the degree is supposed to represent.
Or
and
the
that's
title.
Pretty sad. Yeah. It's pretty sad. But you were a cartoonist.
Really?
My campaign said, let me go finish that thing about the medical school interview person. So because Caltech, my GPA at Caltech was like 3.1, and I couldn't sniff an interview at a UC, University of California Medical School. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote my old freshman roommate who was in medical school at Northwestern in Chicago, mm-hmm. and I said, Mike, I said, I'm just going to try once more before I go to high school teaching. I said, I just give me what you think. I know you don't know for sure, but I want the name, your opinion of the easiest medical school to get into in the United States.
Hmm.
And he said, well, I don't know. I've heard something about Creighton in Omaha, Nebraska. So I applied to Creighton, and somehow I did get on the wait list. They said, well, we're putting you on the wait list several months before school started, but we're not going to interview you unless we get you on the wait list. And then like a month before school was to start, I get a call saying, well, you're in off the wait list. We don't have time to interview you. So I've never had a medical interview. I don't think that will ever happen again.
Well, Petaluma did have some Creighton physicians. Dr. Leone went
sure.
to Creighton,
yeah.
and so did his son Mike Leone went to Creighton. And I'm not sure if the other sons that are physicians went there.
And having been there, I in no way want to imply that it is or ever was the easiest medical school
yeah.
to get into. Although we did have some issues with my being a failed Catholic there, being a Catholic school.
Ah, dear.
But you were baptized.
I was.
Okay.
And I was confirmed. That's,
okay.
You know, you guys are getting to these interesting stories. was confirmed, my mom took me aside after my confirmation. What is that, like seventh grade?
I don't know.
She said, Dan, we've done everything we can for you now. It's up to you. And I said, you're saying I get to decide whether I go to church anymore? You know, I had a bad attitude from day one about the Catholic Church. I may have had it about any church. I would look around and see people. I say, you know, these people are acting like they're the best people in the community.
Yeah.
I know better ones that aren't here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what did you decide? Did you decide to go to church or not?
No, I've not been regularly since that time, although
yes.
Until I finished high school, I'd go to Easter and Christmas with my folks.
I remember my daughter once got in trouble with another girl when they were in high school, and the other girl who was Catholic, her punishment was she had to go to the 5 o'clock Hispanic Mass on Saturday. That was the punishment.
I'm going to church. I'm going to church. I'm going to church this evening. Actually, it's a Nick Mason concert in San Francisco. That's my church.
I
really
like that.
Good. Yeah, the drummer from Pink Floyd. So they're going to play all their old stuff, everything before the metal album. Should be fun going with my daughter. So.
Oh, that's great.
That would be great.
Oh, good.
So it's interesting. I know you're really involved with the End of Life Option Act and, you know, being a failed Catholic. That's kind of an interesting concept. But.
Right, right. So I've worked on that, I think, since 2015. I got involved in the lobbying for that the year before it was passed and made some trips to Sacramento in that regard and some comments to the health committee of the state legislature, and was very happy for that to get passed, and did not foresee it was going to be so hard for people to get access to the act. If you're a Kaiser or Sutter member, you can just call them up, and not all their doctors are required to take part as the law provides, but there are some doctors who agree to take part, and you'll be assigned to one of those for access to the act.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to if you don't have Kaiser Sutter now, people are having a difficult time. I haven't done a survey of this, but
mm-hmm.
I've talked to several doctors who are not Catholic themselves and who don't get paid by St. Joseph or Memorial Hospital in Santa Rosa,
mm-hmm.
who still feel they should kind of go along with the general feeling there
mm-hmm.
and not take part, even though that's not required of them.
So why don't you give us a brief summary of what this,
yes.
this
yeah.
looks like?
So the End of Life Option Act provides that a person who is mentally fit to make their own decisions, okay, who basically does not have more than minimal Alzheimer's disease,
mm-hmm.
And who is over 18 years old, and who has been told by their physician that they have less than 6 months to live,
mm-hmm.
Is able to take the medicine on their own,
mm-hmm.
That they can request their doctor write them a prescription, which for medication which will end their life.
and they have to, I guess the way it's put in terms of their mental state is they have to be able to understand the consequences of what they're going to do.
So you have to already have been diagnosed with a terminal disease before you can offer this?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so.
And again, you know, what people, this is something I still give talks to senior centers and to palliative and hospice care providers about this. And the thing that there's two things. One thing is that you can't just ask your provider, do you support the End of Life Option Act? You have to go beyond that and say, are you willing to take part in the End of Life Option Act? Because you need to change your physician long before that date. Mm-hmm. There are very few physicians, probably here or otherwise anywhere, that has an End of Life Option Act mm-hmm. who will want to take part in this for a patient that's just coming to them to do that.
Is that the part of the Hippocratic Oath?
Yeah, although you said that sort of the way I do. I admit to being a strange duck, you know. I have been in favor of this kind of thing since I was in medical school, and I don't understand why it's taken this long.
Well, it seems to me that it's about addressing human suffering. And I mean, that seems like the chief responsibility of a doctor, someone who's a healer. Obviously, the goal is to try to heal, but at a certain point, if that's not possible, then it's about preventing suffering and ensuring that the patient goes with dignity and without pain, I would think.
No, I agree completely. And honestly, the more I have studied and thought about this, for me, it's patient abandonment to refuse to take part in this with a patient you've had for a long time. To me, that is patient abandonment.
I mean, the other issue is if someone is expressing, and they have a terminal illness and all of that, and they're expressing that they don't want to continue living, it's not like they're not able to necessarily find another way that might not be as clean and with minimal suffering. So that's the other problem about this, is that if you don't make it, you know, something that's available to people, they just could do it on their own.
No, that's right. And many people have over the years used guns and other stuff.
Golden Gate Bridge.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. I think it's important. I think it is just choice. You know, I hate to see a few religions trying to force their religion on everyone else. That's
where a lot of these problems come up.
Well, you know, I was talking earlier, this is probably in 1988 when I was in my speech on the death, you know, the dignity with dying, and it was because of Karen mm-hmm. Ann Quinlan mm-hmm. case. You know, she had taken some drugs and went into a coma and never came out of it, and her parents were really advocating that the feeding tube would be taken off. And that she would have the right to die. And then you have the Terri Schiavo case in Florida where the parents were just on the opposite side, wanted it just to keep her alive. And then there was also a case, the young girl in, I believe, Oakland, that ended up, she was having her tonsils out and ended up with brain damage. And she ended up, I think, in another state because her parents didn't want, they just wanted her to continue alive, even though she was in a vegetative state.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I've been on this bandwagon for a long time, but then I was talking about when my parents went, how the difference between when my dad died, he was ready to die, but it was his heart that gave out. And yet my mom, I was in charge with the hospice with both of them, and she basically, you know, her lungs filled up with fluid. Yeah. And so, you know, I saw different ways and decisions you had to make getting to that point. And they're really hard decisions. And I know as the kind of caregiver for my parents, there are some regrets or thoughts. Should we have done something differently?
Yeah, always.
But in the long run, what's an extra 6 months or an extra year? And it's a hard decision, but I believe that families have a right. And that you should not have a feeding tube in and not have the ability to take it out.
Well, I think the hardest thing is when they're not able to, say, speak for themselves. And the family's having to make that choice. And always in the back of people's minds, or most people's minds, is this idea that maybe it'll come through, maybe a miracle, maybe something will happen. And that's a challenge. It's a really difficult situation. But that's why we have the directives.
You know, and then we have something new, you know, that Gavin Newsom is talking about, the death penalty.
Yes.
Stopping
yes.
the death penalty.
Yeah.
And I personally have gone back and forth. You know, when I was younger, I was supportive of the death penalty.
Wow.
And as I've gotten older, I'm actually on the opposite side because I realize that you can do appeals all the time.
Yeah.
There are people that maybe shouldn't be there because of our justice system.
Yes.
And I would rather just house somebody away or have a good justice system improved. Then
and we also now have DNA testing, which has
it's getting people
really changed the game.
Yeah.
That's right, exactly.
Well, so I share all those concerns, but I've never supported it simply because I don't think it's right to say that we're against killing and then kill people to prove that. It doesn't make any sense, and I never did.
I think it was our new governor that said this, although I could be getting mixed up with someone to say that we don't rape people who are
that's right.
Rape someone.
That's
I mean, the point is. And I don't know what I would do in a situation where, you know, I didn't want to talk about a family member having something horrible happen.
Like my friend.
Or like what happened to Polly Klaas.
That's right.
And I can't speak for those people because I've never experienced that. But what I think is that I would be incredibly upset, obviously. I would want to make sure that that person was not able to do it to anybody else. I think in the midst of maybe it happening, if somehow it was a skirmish and I had to kill the person in the process to protect the person, I don't know what I would do. But once the person is captured and contained and not a threat, I just can't for the life of me see putting them out. That just doesn't make sense to me.
You talk about Polly Klaas and her dad, Mark Klaas, is very pro the death penalty.
Yeah.
And yet his father, who I believe is since passed, it was a three strikes, you're out.
Right.
And Mark was very supportive of three strikes, you're out. And then his dad, who was supportive, did a complete turnaround of being opposed to it because DNA and fair trials, the color of your skin. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why people...
The other problem is that when people are already with three strikes, it's almost like they have no incentive not to go further and commit that third strike because they know they're going in. So that's the other problem is it's almost a disincentive, to not commit a crime.
It all kind of ties together in society. I mean, how you believe, what you believe in, how you feel about things, and actually having the conversation, I think, is most important because so many people don't want to have these conversations, and they all link together. It's kind of like the DNA chain.
Yeah.
You know, it's a continuum.
Yeah, and I think this is, people that don't, I didn't finish this thought earlier, people who don't have Kaiser Sutter are, for the most part, having to have a doctor come up from Berkeley to help them access the end of life oxygen and pay for his travel each way a couple of times and even more becomes even more expensive.
So we've covered that. We've covered the death penalty. We covered Catholicism.
How about bocce ball? Mentoring?
Well, one thing that's coming up again in an election that's coming is abortion again. And the way that that's being spun by people on the right is absolutely hideous. I mean, I heard Sarah Sanders in a press conference responding.
Please help me.
And she went off about how Democrats are all about ripping babies out of women and killing them. And, you know, that kind of rhetoric, first of all, it's absolutely false. But it's just designed to rally up their base. I get it. But what a disgusting misrepresentation of what's actually happening in these cases where women have to make a very, very difficult choice, and it's really only theirs to make. I can't understand this one.
You know, this reminds me of, I was in medical school at Creighton, as we talked about.
Oh.
I had already started there when Roe v. Wade came down.
Yeah.
And then the next year I was doing my OBGYN stint at a Catholic hospital, okay? Archbishop Bergen Mercy Hospital, where we did our OBGYN.
Mm-hmm.
And what I remember from that is all those Catholic OBGYN doctors telling me, being on board with Roe v. Wade and saying that we're not having any more
back alley
women come in to die after they do their own, okay? But the flip side of that is I went back to a 40th year medical school reunion a year or two ago at Creighton, and I found that my former classmates and ones that have gone into OB beyond any discussion and being against abortion in all way, shape, or form.
Wow.
And so that even at the Catholic Center, this has changed.
But so what's the consequence for forcing women to bear a child that either, you know, has some, you know, very health, you know, big health issue, puts them at risk? It's just so strange to me. Well, you're gonna force women to have a baby, okay? Right. That's the consequence.
No, absolutely. And it would be. I wouldn't feel nearly as bad about it if these same folks were asking us to put 10 times as much money into taking care of children.
Right. Taking care of the children, health care.
Right.
And
absolutely.
They're not. They're completely against taking care of the baby once the baby's born.
Well, therefore, putting more money into prisons.
Absolutely.
They like that idea.
Well, they're privatized, and they're on the stock market, so that's why.
There's money to be made.
That's right, exactly.
Oh, boy.
I know.
Oh, boy.
So that's, yeah.
So
yeah.
Cartoon.
No, hold on. I got to move the magic.
Okay.
We're listening to Inside Petaluma on KPCA 103.3 FM. And we have with us today Dr. Dennis Poske. So I just wanted to get that in for anybody who just tuned in.
I just kind of want to bring this back to the Catholic hospitals. I mean, when St. Joseph originally, you know, 20 years ago, was going to go ahead and take over Petaluma Valley, Sherry Cardo and myself, and there was like maybe one other person in the audience that actually even spoke up against this. And so that's how the Petaluma Healthcare kind of came into being, because a woman could go there and get birth control and treatment, but they couldn't within the hospital. And, you know, I think there's ways of fudging that if you need to have your tubes tied up, you have a baby and a cesarean, you can probably have that done. But otherwise, you have to leave that facility. And it's a problem for me. 20 years later.
Absolutely. In fact, we've been talking about this End of Life Option Act. Mm. I feel like if I had ever had a vote in the issue, that our hospital district should take on the responsibility of being sure that people have access to End of Life Act. That they, you know, maybe share a provider with Sebastopol or Roanoke Park or, you know, some other, because we probably can't keep one busy just with the number of people wanting to access that act in Petaluma. But to, you know, have it be responsible for making this accessible to people in the city.
So you won a contest in kindergarten for your cartooning skills. I wanted to know if you're still doing cartooning.
No, I rarely. No, I haven't sold the cartoon. Let's put it that way. You know, I can't even remember the cartoon in kindergarten. I still like to draw a little bit, and I experiment with creating a new character for a comic strip, but I never get there.
You probably know Dale Axelrod, right?
Yes.
He's a great cartoonist.
He did a caricature of me like 20 years ago that I still have when I was at a League of California Cities convention.
Oh, man. That's cool.
I see there's Dale Axelrod there, so I sat down and he did this, you know, sketch. And
great.
I still have it.
Guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's, and he's on the Democratic Central Committee.
Good
he's
thing.
Very active and very much a progressive,
yes,
or whatever we want to call him.
He's a very liberal progressive.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Good guy.
Yes. Yeah. Well, speaking of progressive,
yes,
let's talk about the North Bay Progressive Alliance.
Okay.
And what is your connection to that?
Sure. Well, this actually got started by a group of Dan Monte supporters in the last election, mostly from Marin, but he had he always felt he had a actual stronger following in Petaluma than he did in Marin, and I think he maybe got a slightly higher percentage of the vote. In Petaluma.
I supported him.
I did too.
And I got to know him well because our campaign paths crossed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just very impressed with the people working for him and how dedicated they were and such. And when so some of them wanted to keep going the organization that they had constructed during the campaign. And I think they invited me sort of as a token, not just one token. There's one other person from Sonoma County, from Santa Rosa, on their initial committee. And we wanted to talk about forming a group based on the Richmond Progressive Alliance, which had been so successful in fighting off Chevron attempts to run the city council there some years ago.
Like they tried to get people elected on our city council this time.
Yes.
Those crazy flyers.
Yes. they spent much more at that time, though. Much, you know, that being 10 years ago, and they spent 10 times as much.
But what a backfire. I mean, you'd almost think that it was plotted from the other side.
Right.
You know?
Right. Exactly. Well, it couldn't have been better.
When I grew up in Richmond, there was no one who did not have a family member or at least a cousin working for Chevron.
Right.
My dad worked a little for Chevron before he joined his in-laws' family grocery business.
I know the guy that invented Techron with Chevron.
Interesting.
And I should admit, I have a connection too. In light of disclosing our biases, I worked one summer for Chevron in San Francisco when I was an engineering student, I learned one thing from that, which was my only hope in engineering was to become an academic. I didn't like the corporate life.
Mm.
Yeah. Well,
you could have kind of. I don't know about you, but I worked for Kaiser for 25 years. Mm-hmm. That's how I know you. And I found that to be very corporate. How did you get around that?
Okay. Well, you know, at least physicians were able to. You know, I never felt like I was told to do anything that I didn't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
I could prescribe any treatment that I wanted, that I could find any support for in literature. And I could, in the few cases, like when the new Hep C, I wasn't practicing then, but if I had been practicing recently, when the new Hep C drugs became available, I'm sure that initially you had to call the infectious disease specialist to get approval for that. Mm-hmm. But I'd seen physicians prescribing stuff like that that had no idea in and outside of Kaiser. So I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that. I always felt, you know, and Kaiser let me, if I saw, you know, I've always been a hole filler. The only reason I ran for city council was at the time I ran, I was concerned that there were going to be holes there needing to be filled.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same way at Kaiser. I could start a fibromyalgia clinic when I decided we needed one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I could start a clinic for chronic low back pain to try to save these people from surgery when I thought that was the best thing to do. So I could do some stuff like that. Admittedly, I left once because I couldn't close my practice. And it's interesting that I talk about impatience because a year or two after that, they started letting people close their practices.
Right.
I remember,
you're a pioneer in many ways.
Well, that's being a little bit arrogant, I think. But
humble.
After my first year at Kaiser, how can you say that after I told you that arguably when I was in high school, I thought I might be the smartest person in the world?
I forgot that part. That's because I'm not smart enough.
That one, but yeah. I know I would never be a valedictorian or salutatorian, ever.
Yeah, no, I've never been close to that. But where was I? I forget what I was saying there. But
we were talking about corporate America.
Yeah, I can't argue that from probably anyone other than the physicians and nurses that Kaiser was very corporate. And certainly one reason I went to Kaiser, okay, you know, we're being honest today, the campaign's over,
mm-hmm.
you know.
You weren't honest during the campaign?
No, I was honest.
He just didn't disclose everything.
I didn't disclose absolutely everything.
I know.
So do tell.
But I was the only person graduating from medical training at UC San Diego in 1979 that wanted to work for Kaiser. Okay.
Interesting.
And in fact, a small part of that was that the AMA at that time referred to Kaiser doctors as communists.
Yeah. Well,
okay. Wow.
I was a patient of Kaiser in 1979 when I worked for AT&T, and I did not want to be a patient of Kaiser. It was horrible.
Hmm.
You know, those multiphasic physicals, you couldn't have a primary care physician, and, you know, it felt like a herd of cattle.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I hadn't been a Kaiser patient before that, although I'd done some rotations there in my training in 78. I felt, you know, what was good for me about Kaiser, it was the least expensive HMO by far at that point.
And I think that's why a lot of the large employers offered it to their employees.
But I feel like I did everything people needed and more, and that's partly why I had to leave, you know, at that time, because I was working, you know, you don't hear this anymore, but I was working over 60 hours a week at Kaiser. You know, and I didn't have that much to continue to give on a steady basis.
Yeah.
Well, I've been very impressed with them so far in my recent experience.
And, you know, people, it has a lot to do. Okay, I'm reading Barbara Kingsolver's latest book, and in the few minutes between the rally and coming here,
mm-hmm.
I was doing some reading, and I came across this line, which to me says it all. I don't, you know, be lucky if one of you agrees with me. It says, the key, one of her characters says, the key to happiness is low expectations.
Oh, there you go.
And I think that has a lot to do with Kaiser, you know, because if a person goes in, and I'm not saying, let me jump to something else, is that I have no doubt that Kaiser provides super optimal care if you have run-of-the-mill high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol. What I worry about is if you have the zebra diagnosis, something you guys probably never heard of, pheochromocytoma as a cause of your hypertension, that because everything is so systematized that doesn't get considered in that case if you're having trouble controlling it.
So what is this?
What is that disease?
Explain it.
It's a tumor of part of the adrenal gland that can cause hypertension.
Okay.
And obviously, but can't be treated just with medication.
Right, correct.
And there's no other symptoms other than high blood pressure?
Oh, you could have additional symptoms like anxiety or panic attacks or, you know, anything related to high epinephrine and cortisol in the blood. Hmm. But the main thing is, you know, some people only have hypertension here with that. So it's one of the rare causes of hypertension.
Hmm. Yeah. I know we're contemplating, should we go back to Kaiser or not? But then I had cancer 5 years ago. And so, you know, I can really go to the physician I want. I can make an appointment. I call up and I don't have to get approval. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard to make that decision. But we pay a lot of money for our insurance.
No, now at Kaiser, it is a lot. You know, that's what I don't like. You know, I think it's like all the patients, not all of them, but, you know, in a generic sense, Kaiser won the battle of getting the most patients, but they did it by moving the care and offering a lot of stuff that, in my mind, is not necessary. You know, I'd rather see them charging people less and not quite giving them so much stuff that hasn't been really proven to be effective.
Right, right.
You know, I think we're going to have to, while we're on that, you know, I like to talk about rationing in medicine. You know, we're going to have to ration. People hate that word, we do it now.
That's what the Republicans say.
Well, I have to say, when I was with, you know, caring for my parents, the amount of treatment, the next step for my mother was going to be blood transfusions. Mm. And we kind of made a pact that's not where you really wanted to go. And, of course, I questioned, was that the right decision? I might have had her another 6 months to a year. Mm-hmm. But the decision was to made not to go in that direction. But that's like $5,000 a pop. And she was going to have one or two a week, and she was almost 92 years old. And, you know, you just hate to even think this way, but then I look at people that don't have care, and it's hard on my heart thinking about this, because I really have regrets, and at the other hand, I feel as though we need to take care of people who are not at the end of their life.
Yeah. Well, we might take a lesson from most of the rest of the industrialized world and go for single payer. What's your thoughts on single payer healthcare?
I've always been in favor of single payer.
And as a doctor, it'd be interesting to hear your take.
I would, every time in Santa Rosa when I worked for the first 7 years, we would, some group of physicians would get together and publish a full-page ad whenever there was a push for single payer and put it in the Press Democrat. And I would always add my name to those. And it was like clockwork. A few days later, I'd get a call from the big Kaiser in the sky saying, just be clear that you're not giving Kaiser's opinion. You're giving your own opinion.
Oh, yeah. They're good for giving lectures like that.
And
I ran for city council, they brought me in and had the talk with me as well.
And in fact, I hadn't been to a Santa Rosa physician's lunch for several years and went to one in the campaign and was surprised to see them more anti-single payer than I've ever heard them, you know, on the record. Basically telling us we might lose our pensions if single payer passed.
Well, there was a Dr. Shear in Petaluma, and he was actually kind of progressive.
Oh, he was a very nice guy.
He was a great guy, and he really tried to make it that, you know, access for care. And the physicians in town loved him, but, boy, they did not support him at all. And now physicians will say the opposite. You know, he's not around anymore.
Right.
But they really actually support what he was trying to do. He was truly progressive in his thoughts on it. And it's where we should have been, and it's where some people are now today.
Yes.
So Medicare for All, what's your thoughts on that?
I think that still allows the insurers to be in the drug companies to kind of continue to do what they're doing to some degree.
Well, it's interesting because it seems like there's different different ideas about how that would work. I mean, depending, right now we have these Democratic candidates, and a lot of them are saying they're for Medicare for all, and they echo a recent bill. I don't think it passed through the House, but the last one that Sanders and some other people were involved with. So there's some nuance that I'm hearing. Some people say, well, we want to still have some private insurance, supplemental insurance. When you listen to Bernie Sanders, he says, well, for certain elective processes and things like that. I lived in the Netherlands for a couple of years, and they actually had a combination of sort of a public option health insurance and then private supplemental. I know a lot of countries work that way. So,
no, I mean, I like to get the insurance companies and drug companies out as much as possible. I like to, whatever system we have, I'd like to see them negotiating for everyone with the drug companies on the drug prices. And I would like to, you know, one of the nuances I think comes is, do we want basic Medicare for all, or do we want senior advantage Medicare for all? Some people really get hung up on that. I don't think we can afford for very much longer senior advantage Medicare for all. This is a high-end Medicaid, you know, where you've got a little extra insurance on top of it, so it covers more stuff. I don't think we're going to be able to continue with that. You know, I think we're headed for a time when, if you have a disease with only one treatment and it costs $150,000 a year, I would vote say, okay, we're gonna pay that $150,000 if it's a curative treatment on something that's otherwise fatal and there's nothing else. Okay, but if someone has a lymphoma like I had 25 years ago, and if we have a drug that cures, pick a number, cures 75% of cases of lymphoma for $5, and we got a new drug for $150,000 that cures 79%. Regardless of whether it affects someone in my family, I would say, you know, we can't afford that extra 4% or something like that.
Of course, there's other things. Sometimes I've heard some people talk about the idea of having some means tests for some people on Medicare, because someone in my family who was pretty well off even made the same point. They're like, wow, this is so inexpensive for me, and I could actually afford to be paying more. So that's another way to look at it.
No, absolutely. Although it seems to me people get hung up on where to draw the lines. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And then you can't pass anything by a vote if you can't get everyone on the same page.
Well, Klobuchar said at least let's get a public option, because that really should have been in the ACA to begin with.
Right.
And that would have helped control.
And we were lucky we got what we got in the ACA.
And people
realized this, and that was kind of the beginning, and then you had to move on from there, and then we ended up with, you know, Trump in office that just...
Well, that's
going to slash everything.
That's a Klobuchar's point. Yeah. It's like we can add to ACA and get the public option that really should have been there in the first place, but even Democrats weren't supporting that, and part of it is the way funding comes in from different lobbyists.
Right. I want to just give a tip for the day.
Okay.
There is, if you go on your website, you can go to GoodRx for people that can't afford a prescription. You'd be surprised at going to different areas how cheap the drug is compared to other pharmacies. Mm-hmm. I looked at we have Anthem. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at a drug yesterday, and it was going to cost me $350. But yet, if you're on other plans besides Anthem, the drug was like $27 or less.
Or if you bring them in from Canada.
Well, that's another option, but I don't always have that option.
Oh,
but it's GoodRx, and it's really worthwhile for people that don't have Anthem.
I had Anthem before.
Yeah.
That was a long topic.
That was a long topic.
We're running out of time, and so I wanted to mention that I also wanted to say that you sat on the board of Mentor Me Petaluma. That's where I also sat on the board briefly with you, and you've got an event that you created, an annual event that you created out of that.
Right, we have.
It's coming up.
The Bocce Ballapalooza and Garden Party at Rob and Karen Turner's home. It's been there. This will be the 7th or 8th year, and it's on Sunday, April 28th, starting about noon. You can sign up on the Mentor Me website. There are teams of four.
We usually have about 30 teams or 120 people taking part, and we have another 20 or 30 folks that just like the party and for a much reduced fee can just buy lunch.
So what is the fee to get in?
$80 per person or $320 for a team. Actually, I think it's $75 a person and $300 for a team, somewhere in there, either $75 or $80 per person or only $25 to just join us for lunch.
So a team is four people. That's
four
what I
people.
Thought. Okay.
Two on each side of the court. You know, this is not for...
I love this game.
Red Hots, you know, because it's on the grass. There are bad bounces and such. Usually there's only one team out of 30 that's dedicated to winning at all costs, and so we have to watch out for that one team. But it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, we talk a lot about slow food. It's slow fun. Mm-hmm. Plenty of time to trash talk with your opponents.
Good.
Time to have a conversation with someone between your rare shots.
It's on Orthodox Easter. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We had trouble. You know, it used to
Did
be in the fall.
On purpose?
It used to be in the fall. And when they moved the Mad Hatter ball back last year from spring to fall, they moved us to the spring. So hopefully that'll work just as well. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think this, you know, I'll take credit for this because when I was on the board, probably after you left at that point, there was a golf tournament that was going to be their second annual golf tournament that had three people signed up 3 days before the event.
Hmm.
And, you know, they said, we got to find something else to do. And, you know, I grew up playing bocce at the through the Croatian Fraternal Club of America.
Wow.
And it was a good game. It was obviously slow. You know, the grandfathers would only let us play 5 minutes before they started in the morning and 5 minutes after they finished in the evening. But it's a good version of slow fun. And if I have one more minute.
You've got a few more. I want to get back. I just wanted to make sure you got everything.
Yeah. I appreciate that. And I just wanted to make sure I didn't get to the timing of this North Bay Progressive Alliance, which I talked about it being modeled on the Richmond Progressive Alliance. And actually, it's in preparation. We're going to send some representatives to the first inaugural meeting of the California Progressive Alliance, which Gail McLaughlin, who ran for lieutenant governor on the progressive ticket last election. She is starting this California Progressive Alliance. And in Marin, they really feel a need for this. And I think we have a need for here someone to just help all the groups collaborate and really take some of the pressure off them. I feel like all our activists are strained to the limit of what they can do. And maybe something like this could help. And I sort of see this a little bit as a hole that maybe I can help fill. But we're having this inaugural meeting at McGuire's Pub tomorrow. Soft start at 1 o'clock, hard start at 1:30, to discuss whether this fits with Petaluma and Sonoma County.
Cool. So is that open to any progressive that wants to show?
Any progressive and any near progressive that wants to see if it is.
What time is it tomorrow?
Starts at 1.
1. Okay.
And we were talking about this earlier, but you want to go over what defines a progressive?
Oh, sure. I like to just read this because I'm just not good at memorizing stuff, and I like this the way it's stated. I guess I had my fingers in it. We define, this is the North Bay Progressive Alliance's definition. We define progressive as anything or anyone that has a predilection for the poor, the working class, and for historically marginalized communities, and that works to actively elevate and not further harm these communities. This applies to issues, individuals, organizations, legislation, and overall narrative. I think this, you know, this fits with my little campaign slogan, but the next version of it, when I had trouble getting into someone's house talking about housing, where I said, do you think it's right that two people could work full-time for minimum wage and not find a place to live? To me, something is just horribly wrong with our society.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care whether we lower the price of housing or raise their income. Do you know what I mean? But
something has to happen.
Or build a boarding house. You know, we used to have boarding houses that were a lot less expensive. I guess the old Petaluma Hotel was a little bit.
It was a boarding house. Yeah. Absolutely.
Now it's like $130 a night or something.
No, it was an absolute boarding house.
At least.
You know, and then that goes back to, quickly, the CASA agreement.
Yes.
Which is brought to us by MTC and other organizations. And so they had the first discussion at the Petaluma Council on Monday night, so I went to listen to this, and what I realized is the train had already left that station, and it's already in Sacramento dealing with actually bills instead.
All right. Can I read you one other thing?
Absolutely.
This is my latest AOC quote that I love. Okay, I love AOC. Let's be honest about that. She says, courage begets courage. The first person who stands up has to encounter the most amount of fear and discomfort. But once the first person stands up, it becomes immensely easier for the second and the third.
Yeah.
Okay. And I believe that, you know, this CASA Compact is supposed to have something for everyone. Okay, to give up. And I think we can't wait. You know, we've been waiting for the state to do something for a long time. I'm not convinced that it will happen. Even if it does, over half the time, these bills have a little thing in them that says that preference will be given to cities that have already dedicated some funds to this cause.
Right.
See about that. You know, about half of these bills related to housing.
It's called share help.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, cost-sharing. And so I think it's incumbent upon the city council to take some action to raise money in Petaluma for this type of thing, regardless of what the state does. And I think it will come in handy in accessing state and federal funds if they become available.
And I agree with you. And the city of Petaluma, it was interesting because they talked about their financial forecast before talking about the CASA agreement. But for the CASA agreement, some of my concerns were within a quarter of a mile around a rail station, you had to build seven-story buildings. There was not really an option. So there's a lot to be discussed about it, and I'm going to certainly be watching it. But then there's a lot of things that we could pull off of to bring as far as housing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that was a good hour today, and we didn't even hit on everything. We didn't talk about rapid response, so I guess that means you're going to have to come back on.
That would be great.
And I want to thank Dr. Dennis Postkey for...
But if I come back, no doctor, we don't
need it. No, let's not do doctor. We can talk about... We didn't even talk about your family. Did everybody know that Dennis was married to a doctor?
I knew that, but does anybody, everybody know this? Yeah, that's right. But he's a fantastic chef.
Okay, so show will be available to listen to at our website, insidepetaluma.com, later on in the week. And
I'll post it to it.
Yeah, okay, well, I'll get it out today. And you've been listening to Inside Petaluma. I'm Cindy Thomas, and here with Jason Davies.
Welcome back, Jason.
And it's Peter Thompson, my co-host. And we will be back here next Friday. So we'll see you then.
See you later.
Adios. Bye.